Today's share in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Yuma, Daf Nun Dalet. We are learning today Le'ila Nishmas David Rubinovitz, David B'Rev Shlomo Halevi. All the Nishmas we learn for should have an Aliyah. Yesterday's share, towards the end of the share, we introduced a question as to what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's opinion was regarding the status of the Orom. There's two possibilities. It was either taken into Golus by Nebuchadnezzar, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, or it was hidden by Yoshio underneath the caverns of the Beis HaMikdash. So we had first brought down a brisa that stated, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said that the Aron was taken into Golus. And then Ula had come along and said that no, the Aron was in fact Nignaz according to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And that's what we're trying to understand right now. Ula had brought down that Rav Masio Bar Charish had asked Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai when they were in Rome together, what was the status of the Aron? And he brought down Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, who said that the Aron was taken by Nebuchadnezzar. And we left off yesterday on Nun Dalet Omer Aleph. We'll pick up at the end of the very first line, even though we had read it yesterday. Ata Maya to Omer. That was the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So Rav Masio Bar Charish had asked Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, what's your point? What is your opinion on the status of the Aron? So Amar Lo, so Rav Shimon Yochai said back to Rav Masio Ben Charash that Ani Omer, Aron Bimkomo Nignaz. I do believe, like we had had the opinion previously from Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi, that the Aron was Nignaz underneath the Beis HaMikdash. And this is based upon the Pasuk, Shneimar Vayarichu Habadim V'Gomer. What is the full Pasuk? Vayarichu Habadim Vayiro Roshi Habadim in HaKodesh Al Pnei HaDevir V'lo Yiro Achutza. And here's the critical point, Vayusham Ad HaYom HaZeh. They were there until this very day. So the V'Gomer over here is very important. That's where the drasha comes from. We'll actually go back and darshan this earlier part of the Pasuk later in the Shia today. But right now, that's what Ula had said, that Rav Masio ben Charish was responded to by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, that he held, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai held, that the Aron was Nignaz. So here we have the second opinion, according to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. First opinion was that it was taken into Golus, and we have the opinion now from Ula that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai held that it was Nignaz. We're now going to question this and end up with either Tiyufta or Kasha on Ula. So Gemara says, Amalei Rabbi Ula, Rabbi says to Ula, my mashma, how do you see from Rav Shimon Bar Yochai that the Aron is there to this very day? Because it's saying, Dechsev, Vayusham Ad HaYom HaZeh, from the end of the Pasuk, what we had just now is the Vagomer, it's there till this very day, meaning that it's Nignaz underneath the Beis HaMikdash right now. The Chol Hecho Dechsev Ad HaYom HaZeh, wherever it says, it uses a lashon of until this very day, so it means Leolamhu, it means forever. So therefore, it's there right now, and it wasn't taken into Golus. Is that really true? That's what Rabbi Nawe Sula, is that your drasha? Is that how you understand Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? The Pasuk tells us, Yevusi Yoshev Yerushalayim, the Yevusi are still in Yerushalayim. Lo Harishu B'nei Ben Yamin. The B'nei Ben Yamin could never get rid of the Yevusi from Yerushalayim. Vayeshev HaYevusi Esmei Ben Yamin B'Yerushalayim Ad HaYom HaZeh. And both the Yevusi and the B'nei Ben Yamin are in Yerushalayim until this very day. Now, does that mean until this very day means that they never were Nigla? Hachanami Delo Golu, the Vnei Ben Yamin, they're still in Yerushalayim to this very day. They never went into Golus? That's not true. I'll show you that they also never went into Golus, because we'll now bring two proofs that Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael were literally, nobody was there during the period of time, some of the years between the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. Well, Tanya, it says in the Braisa, Yehuda Omer, Chamishim Ushtayim Shona Lo'avarish B'Yehuda. For a 52-year period of time, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, nobody was in Yehuda. Nobody was in Eretz Yisrael. Shinemar, what's this based upon? Because the Pasuk says in Yirmiyahu, Al Heharim Esa B'chi Vonehi. In regards to the hills of Yerushalayim, of Yehuda, or Yehuda, I will nebuch cry out and have all sorts of wailing. V'al na'os midbar kina, and I'll make a kina, similar to the kinos that we have, a very sad song. I'll make a dirge about the destruction of the midbar, of midbar Yehuda. Why? Ki nitzesu mibli ish over. They're totally destroyed. They are burnt up, and not a single person has gone there for this 52-year period of time, and we'll prove that it's 52 years in a moment. There won't be a sound of any of the mikneh, any of the flock over there. Me'ov hashamayim, not the birds in the sky, not behemo, nor the animals, nor the duhalachu. Not even animals are going over there. Now, it said already there is no sound of the mikneh. So why did it have to repeat v'yad behema? So v'darshin behema, if you add it up, begematria is chamshin ushtaim havu, right? The beis is 2, the 2 heis is 10, that's 5 and 5, so that's 12, and 40 for the mem is 52. So behema begematria is 52. And that teaches us that for 52 years, there was nobody present there. So that's the first proof that how could you tell me the B'nai Binyamin in Yerushalayim? It says for 52 years, nobody was present. But furthermore, there's another braisa as well that says, V'tanya, Rav Yossi Omer, Shev Ashanim Niskaima, Gofris for Melach Meretz Yisrael. He holds that for a 7-year period of time, there was Gofris and Melach, sulfur and salt in Eretz Yisrael, and nobody else. From Rav Yochanan, my time, Rav Yossi, where did he get this from? So he brings down Xer Shova, Asya, Bris, the same word, bris, is used in two places, and that signifies over here the 7 years of total desolation. K'siv hocha v'higbir bris l'rabim shavu echad. It says over here, a pasuk in Daniel, that there will be a bris for 7 years, and it says, k'siv hosam, it says in Chumash, v'amru alasher ozu is bris Hashem lokei avusam. They gave up the bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's for a 7-year period of time. There were no people in Eretz Yisrael. There's Niskaimo, Gorfer Semelach. So the 52 years or the 7 years, there was nobody there. So how can you tell me, Ula, that the drush is because it says, Ad Hayom Hazeh, means that the Oren is there to this very day. It was not taken into Gullus because of the words, Ad Hayom Hazeh, so too. Then you should be saying that the B'nai Binyamin should be there, Ad Hayom Hazeh, but that's not true. So that's the Kashan Ula. So Ula answers, Omalei. Ula says to Rabbah, Hachok Siv Sham, Hasim Lok Siv Sham. In regards to the pasuk that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai brought, it said, Sham, there. But in regards to the pasuk about the Bnei Binyamin, it doesn't mention anything about Ad Hayom Hazeh, meaning Sham, that they are over there. And that's why there's a difference between the two. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is correct in saying that Ad Hayom Hazeh means there even today, and it wasn't taken by Nebuchadnezzar, as opposed to Bnei Binyamin, it doesn't mean that they're still there. More questions that, really? Is the word Sham the critical factor? Wherever it says the word Sham, that's the deciding factor that it means even to this very day? I'll show you that that's not true. It says in the following braisa, this is a pasuk from Divrei Hayamim, it says, Umehem min b'nei Shimon, from the children of Shimon, they fought with Amalek, holchu lahar Seir, anoshim chamesh meyor, so it took 500 men, they went to Har Seir, and who were the leaders of the b'nei Shimon? Uflatya, Unaraya, Urefoya, Uziel, b'nei Yishi b'roshim, they were the ones that were leading the group of people, v'yaku asher esapleitel Amalek, and they defeated Amalek that was there, v'yeshu sham ad hayom hazeh. So here we have ad hayom hazeh, and it has the word sham. Now, does this mean that the B'nai Shimon are still there to this very day? But we know that when Sancheir came and he was Nigla, the northern kingdom, the Malchus Yisrael, and this was his modus operandi, he would displace the people, the indigenous population, he would move them someplace else. They would have less of a reason to go and rebel. They're not even in their home. So therefore, he would displace one population with another population. He brought in the Shomronim, he brought in the Kusim from Eretz Kuta to this area of Eretz Yisrael, the northern kingdom area. And that's why the Kusim came. And this was his typical way. So he uprooted the B'nai Shimon. Shenema v'osir givulos amim vasudoseihem shoseisi. So how can you tell me, even though it says the word v'yeshu sham, so it says the word sham, and ad hayom hazeh, that means to this very day. That's not true. So the Gemara says, tiyufta. So yes, we've schlugged up Ula's understanding of Shimon Bar Yochai. Now, that's the gear so that we have to Yufta. In the Dikduke Sofrim, he actually ends off over here with a Kasha, that there is a Teretz that Ula could give, that Yufta is a stronger refutation. Kasha is a less strong refutation. Even Yufta sometimes has an answer to it. But in any event, there are Teretz that could be given to substantiate Ula's understanding of Shimon Bar Yochai. But the simple reading over here of the Gemara is that Ula is incorrect, and that's not the right way to understand Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay. Amr Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman says, Tana, we learned in the following braisa, V'chacham lomrim, Arun belishkas dir ha'etzim hayagonus. Now, this goes according to the opinion that the Arun was Nignaz, it wasn't captured by Nebuchadnezzar, and this is something that we had learned earlier in our Gemara, and this was also in the Gemara in Menachos, and this is Gemara in Shkolim, that described how one of the Kohanim saw something. The earth was raised in a certain area, the tile was raised, and therefore we realized something was hidden underneath this, and before he had a chance to go and announce it to everybody else, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his life. So this is what Rav Nachman is telling us, the Chachamim tell us in this Braisa, Aron belishkas dira eitzim hayagonus, that the aron was actually underneath the chamber where they had the dira eitzim, the chamber where they stored the wood. And Amar Nachum Yitzchak afanan namitinino. We learned this as well in a Mishnah in Shkolim. We didn't have it that long ago, and we had it early in the Masechta. Ma'aseh kohen echol shoymes asek. There was once a kohen that was doing something. We'll see in a moment that he was playing with his axe in the dira eitzim. And the v'ra'u ritzba mishuna mechavrasel. He saw that the tiles on the floor, part of the shayish marble tile, was somewhat raised up compared to all the others, implying that there was something hidden there, and then the tile was put back on top of it. Ubavo Diaz Chaver is about to go and tell one of his friends, hey, that's where the Aron is buried. Below his speaker, Ligmar Sadobar, and he didn't get a chance to finish his statement, actually Yotz Nishma, so until HaKadosh Baruch Hu took his life. And they knew, V'yadu B'yichud, Shisham Aron Gunners, and everybody realized that there was something special hidden over there, and that was the Aron. Now, we just used the terminology, Ma'is B'koin Echot Shoy Misasek. So the Gemara asks, Ma'i Havi Ovid, what was he doing that he was Misasek? So Amar Rabbi Chalbo says, Misasek B'kardumo Hoya. He was playing over here with his axe, with his kardum. There was a place where they cut the wood, so Mestami was tossing or using the axe or playing with the axe in some way. The Tosfos Yeshanim says over here, Misochek B'kardumo Hoya. He was playing with his axe. Whatever he was doing, he was twiddling with his axe. Furthermore, Tanan Dei Rabbi Shmuel, they learned the basement of Rabbi Shmuel, that it was Shnei Kohanim Bali Mumim, Hayu Maslim Baitzim, that the Maisa was in regards to two Kohanim that were Bali Mumim. A Bali Mumim is not allowed to do the Avoda, but the Bali Mumim were Kashur Kohanim in all other aspects. They were entitled to get some of the Matnos Kohuna from the Beis HaMikdash, and their job was to deworm the wood for the firewood that would be used on the Mizbeach and for the Shnei Gzeri Eitzim that would be brought as a carbon Eitzim every day. So these Bali Mumim Kohanim were Maslim Ba'Eitzim. As Rashi reminds us, we learned in the Mishnah in Midos, Kol Eitz Sheyesh Bo Tolas, Posel Mizbeach. If there were worms in these trees, then it's Pasnish to bring them up, they're Posel to bring up on the Mizbeach. So these Bali Mumim, Shein Ru'uyin Lavodas Acheres, they couldn't do anything else. They were deworming the wood over here in the Lishkasa Eitzim. The Nishmito Kardumo Shel Echad, as they were deworming it, so one of them, the axe that he was deworming the pieces of wood, slipped. Nishmito kardumu shalechemihem, the naflo sham, and it fell into that area. The yotza esh v'achaloso, and a fire came and burned it all up, ate it all up. Now, what did it eat up? So the simple understanding would be that it burned up the axe. However, the Sefer Yefei Naim quotes the Yerushalmi, where it says that the kohen was burned from the fire that came out of the hatchet. So the understanding over here of Achaloso was the actual kohen. Okay, now we had Rav Yehuda Rami. Rav Yehuda asked the following problem. He says it's a stira. It says in the pasuk that we quoted earlier in the shiur today, Ksiv Vayirohu Roshei Abadim. This was a pasuk we quoted earlier, Vayarichu Abadim, the Badim extended. We'll still explain what that means, Vayarichu Abadim. And it says, Vayirohu Roshei Abadim min HaKodesh al Pnei Advir. You could see the poles of the Oren Kodesh. They were extending into the paroches known as the Devir. Now, we'll have a lot of questions on this because the first Beis HaMikdash, there was the Amatraxin. So what type of a paroches was there? And the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron. So what is this referring to? We'll get to all of this in the Gemara in a few moments. In any event, Rav Yehuda asks right now, in the Pasuk it says, Vayiru Roshei HaBadim. You could see the heads of the Badim. But then it says later in the Pasuk, Usiv V'lo Yiro Achutza. The end of the Pasuk says, V'lo Yiro Achutza V'yusham Ariyom Azeh. So what's going on? The Pasuk is internally contradictory. It says you could see the Roshei HaBadim, and then it says Loyeru Achutza, you couldn't see them. So what's going on? HaKeitzad, how do you explain this? So Rav Yehuda explained, Nirin Ve'ein Nirin. They were able to be seen, but they weren't able to be seen. What is exactly does this mean? So Tani Nami Yoch, we have a Braisa that will explain it, so I'll read the Braisa, and then we'll know what he meant when he said Nirin Ve'ein Nirin. The Braisa says, Vayirohu Roshei HaBadim. It says that they're able to see the Roshei HaBadim. You might have thought that the poles on the Aron were not allowed to move. We know that they always had to be on the Aron, so you might have thought they were stationary. So the answer is no. It says at the beginning of the Pasuk that the Badim, these poles, were able to slide through the rings. They weren't stationary. They had to constantly be within the two rings. One ring was on one side of the Aron, and the other ring was on the other side of the Aron, and you had two sets of rings on each of the two sides of the Aron. So let's say the Aron was facing in an orientation of east to west. So on the southern side, you had the two rings with the Badim in it. And on the northern side, you had two rings with the Badim in it. So these Badim, these poles, could be moved within the rings. They could go forward and backwards. As long as they both stay within the rings, you're okay. So Bayarichu Abadim means that the Badim could be extended to reach to the paroches. Yochel Yumikroim Ba Paroches Yotzin. You might have thought they actually pierced the paroches and went through it. they were still within the rings of the aro, but as they're sliding forward, you might have thought that they pressed through the paroches, through holes in the paroches. Talmud Lomar, v'lo yeru achutza. They weren't pressing through. They couldn't physically be seen. But it says that they were seen. So what's going on? Okay, it's that. So it's dochachin, they're pushing against the curtain, ubolten, making a projection into the curtain, the yosim v'paroches, and it looks like there's a projection coming out of the paroches, but there's no physical bottom coming out. And this is analogous, v'nirin kishnei dadi ish. It's like the two breasts of a woman pushing against her clothing. So it, the breasts stick out, they push the clothing out. So too, the bottom pushed the paroches out, but you don't see the breasts of the woman, the clothing is blocking it. So too, you didn't see the actual poles, the paroches was intact, and that's what you saw, shenemar. And it explains, this is what it explains in Shir HaShirim, where it tells us, Tsuror Hamor, Dodi Li, Bein Shoda Yolin, that you have the Ketores, that Tsuror Hamor is in between the breasts, which is a description over here of the Badim pushing out against the Parochas, and that's where the Kohen Gadol stood, and he burnt the Haktoris on Yom Kippur. So in other words, when it says Nirin, the Ein Nirin, it means that you can see an idea of the Badim being there, albeit you can't see the Badim themselves. You just see the projection, the pushing against the paroches, but you don't actually see the badim. And that explains the seeming stira in the pasuk. Now, Amar of Ketina, he says, "B'shor shal Yisrael olim leregel." When Klai Yisrael would go up on the regel, they go up on the shlosh regolim on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkis. The Kohanim megolin lohem esa paroches. The Kohanim would go and unroll the paroches. Now, why was there a paroches in the Bayis Rishon? So Rashi brings down a very important idea that Haprusa neged Pesach shebemechitzas amatraxin. There was a wall in the first Beis Hamikdash, but in the wall there was some sort of a opening, and by the opening they had a paroches. So even in the first Beis Hamikdash, while they had a wall, the amatraxin, there still was a paroches over a part of the wall that was removed, and that's what the Badim pushed against. So even in the first Beis Hamikdash, this was present. So they would unroll Megolin Lehem Esa Paroches. They would unroll the Paroches. Marilim Esa Kruvim Shoyim Orim Zebazeh. And they would show the Kruvim are Kiruvim, like two young teenagers. And one was male, one was female. And they were embraced together. As Rashi explains, they were Dovuk. They were attached to each other. Loshun Divuk, Kamo. Elon Shenifshachu Mu'ura Beklipa, and this represented the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Klai Yisrael, the man and the woman, the husband and the wife. That's an analogy for the relationship of Klai Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole Shir HaShirim is our relationship, as we just said, Tzror Hamor Dodi Li Bein Shaddai Yolin is a relationship description, an allegory of the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klai Yisrael. And the Kohanim would open up the curtains and show the Kruvim to Klai Yisrael. They say to Klai Yisrael, look how beloved you are in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we are like the husband and wife hugging each other, holding each other, like a husband and a wife, like a man and a woman. Now, this is somewhat problematic because we know that you're not allowed to look at the Aro. You're not allowed to look at the Kruvim. Moshe Ruchista says, wait a second. The Pasuk tells us, V'lo yavoh liroz kevalai es ha-kodesh. When the B'nai Kohas had to go and carry the Aro, so it was specifically instructed, don't look at it. Put it back into its nartik. Put it back into its container when you're traveling, and don't look at it. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Bishas Hachnosas Kelim Lenartek Shalem, make sure that when you're putting the Kelim for travel, they traveled throughout the Midbar. So when the Onan got up, we traveled, so they had to carry the Mishkan with them. So the Mishkan was put away. So when they put away the Kelim, such as the Aron, they had to put it into the containers, into the Nartek. So it said, don't look at it, because if you look at it, you're going to die. So here we see that in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, when the B'nai Kohas were carrying the Kelim, they weren't allowed to look at them. So how can you tell me now, Rav Ketina, that they opened up the Paroches to show the people the Kruvim? You're not allowed to look at them. So Amar Rav Nachman, Rachel says, no, depends when. When we were in the Mishkan, we were considered like an Arusa. But once we were in the Beis HaMikdash, we were considered like already an Asua. And that's the analogy that we use, our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. We were engaged, the first stage of marriage, the halachic engagement, the Arusa status versus the Nesua status. And that's what Rav Nachman tells us. Moshe Lakala. When the Kala gets married, they used to have the separation between the Eris and the Nesua by up to a year. So when she's still living in her father's house, even though she's married, she's also to be with her husband still. They haven't had the second stage of marriage. So Klai Yisrael in the desert was like a married first stage woman, but not a second stage nesuah married woman. So Marshal Lakala Kozman should be a Savia while she's still living in her father's house. In other words, she's not fully married. Tsnua Mibala, the husband can't look at her, so to say, and therefore they're not fully married. However, once she moves into her father-in-law's house, the custom was in those days that they would move into the father-in-law's house, the girl would move into the her husband's house. And therefore, that's the Beis HaMikdash. Oh, ain't a tznu mibala. She no longer is tznua in the same way she was before, because now she's fully married. So in the Mishkan, you're right, the Bnei Kos couldn't go look at the Akelim. However, once we're in the Beis HaMikdash, they were allowed to look at the Kruvim. Not happy yet. Moshe Rav Chana Bar Ketina. Rav Chana, who is the son of Rav Ketina, says, wait a second. Now, his father, Rav Ketina, was the one that brought this down. And his son, Rav Chana Bar Ketina, says, but my father, what about the Maisa that we just had, that they saw the Aron and they died? They saw the place where the Aron was and they died. Now, that was already in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, no. Now, we're no longer considered like a Nesua. During the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, when this Maisa occurred, so Nebuch, we were in an estranged situation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nisgarsha Ka'amri. So you're talking here that in the second Beis HaMikdash, we weren't considered like a happily married couple, Kaviyochu, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're the equivalent of being like Nisgarsha. Now, the Mepharshim all point out that we never really were Nisgarsha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Estranged is a better description of the Nisgarsha that was separated from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we were not really Nisgarsha. And Nisgarsha, Chazul Chibos HaRishona, in this estranged type of a state, so then now we're no longer able to look at the Kruvim because it's like we were in the pre-full marriage state. So we've resumed going back to a state where we're not as close with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, we're never divorced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're in this estranged state, which Be'ez Hashem, with the rebuilding of the third Beis HaMikdash, here remain, we'll go back to being in a fully married state, Kaviyochu, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why, during the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Kohanim that were Maslian, or the Kohen that was playing with his Kardom, saw the place where the Aron was, he had to die because you weren't allowed to look at the Aron. Now, B'mayiskin, what are we talking about in this whole Maisa? Inema B'mikdash Rishon, if you're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, Mihavi Paroches, was there a Paroches there? Now, I already explained the answer to this, that there was a Paroches there with the Amatraxin. But the simple understanding is that we're not talking about the first Beis HaMikdash because they didn't have real Paroches over there. So it must be talking about Ela B'mikdash Sheni. So then Mihavi Kruvim. So there were no Kruvim in the second Beis HaMikdash because we didn't have the Aron. So Gemara says, no, Olam B'mikdash Rishon. We are talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, Umay Paroches. And what are we talking about? Uproches Debave. We're talking about a Paroches that was the entranceway, just like there was an entranceway into the Heichal, into the Ulam, so too there was an entranceway in through the Amatraxin, as we already mentioned, with the Paroches. The Omer Rebbe Zeira Omer Rav, the Rebbe Zeira name of Rav, that Shlosha also Paroches Hayu B'mikdash. Now he's referring here to the second Beis HaMikdash, but the similar idea, by the second Beis HaMikdash, we found that there were Paroches Debavi, there were Paroches that were, so to say, sealing off these entranceways, but they could be removed, and they could be rolled up or curled up, or hooked up, and therefore you could see through them. So in the second Beis HaMikdash, there were 13 parochas in, Shiva Kineged Shiva Sharim, by the seven gateways in the Azara. So there were seven openings into the Azaras, each of them had a parochas. Then there was Shtayim, Achas Lepiskel Shul Hechel, V'Achas Lepiskel Shul Ulam. Then the entranceway into the Ulam, and the entranceway into the Hechel. That's another two, we're up to nine. They had a parochas there, and then Shtayim Badvir. And then there was the double parochas structure that we talked about, where the Amatraxin was in the first Beis HaMikdash, we had two parochas in. This is according to Man Yom, it says there were two parochas in there. So now we're up to 11. And then Ushtayim Kineg Damaliyah. And likewise, there was similarly two parochas in up in the attic, in the second floor area. So that's a total of 13 parochas in. And just like they had this in the second Beis HaMikdash, so too, parochas, the Bavi, they had these curtains, these parochas in, that were covering up the entranceways. Like we pointed out from Rashi, that it was opening in the Amatraxin, and that's where the parochas was. That's Teretz number one. Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Omar, he gives his teretz of it too. He says, La'olam b'mikdash sheni. No, we are talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. Aye, you just said in the second Beis HaMikdash, Mihavu Kruvim, there are no Kruvim. Yes, the original Kruvim weren't there, but they had a tzior, a representation of the Kruvim that was on the walls. And that's what he says, La'olam b'mikdash sheni. We're talking about the second Beis HaMikdash. Ukruvim de tzurasa havu kaime. They had images of the Kruvim. Tzura, they had a lithograph. Mitzuyarim b'kosel, Rashi says, b'midyatam amanim, they were drawn onto the walls of the kosel of the Kodesh Kedoshim, or chukin, or they were engraved or chiseled into the kiris ha'etz milafdim b'kosel avanim, the wooden covers that were on top of the stone walls. So That's what was present even in the second Beis HaMikdash. So not the real Kruvim, but images of the Kruvim. Kruvim Dutzuros Avu Kaime. The Siv, as the Pasuk says, Beis Kol Kiros Habayis May Save Kola. This is a Pasuk that we have in Melachim Aleph. The whole Pasuk continues and it says, Beis Kol Kiros Habayis May Save Kela Pituche Miklos Kruvim. And then it says, Vesimros Upiture Tzitzim Milifnim Velachitzim. That's the rest of the pasuk that we're quoting over here, telling us what the structure was, that there were all sorts of figures of the Keruvim in the Beis HaMikdash, and they had trees, and they had flowers, and then it says in another pasuk, Vitzipa Zov Miyushar Alem Chuke, and there was gold plating over them, over these Tziurim, and then another pasuk says, Uksiv Kimar Ish V'Loyos. Now what does this mean? So the Gemara says, "Amai kemar ish veloyos." So Amar Rabba Bar Rav Shila. Rabba Bar Rav Shila said, "We turn to Nundalud Amud Beis." So he says, "This means ki ish hamaore balavoya shalo." This is a man, as Rashi says, "Hanidvak bechavuk beishto bein zrosav." A man is embracing his wife; he's hugging his wife in between his arms. So this is what the tziurim were, and that was what was present in the second Beis HaMikdash. Even though they didn't have the physical three-dimensional structures of the Kruvim, they were nignaz, or they were taken into captivity, like the two opinions that we had with the Aron, but they did have these tziurim. And the Gemara says, Amar Rish Lakish, Rish Lakish says, B'shoah she'nichlusu nochum lehechol. Nebuch, when the Goyim came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, so ro Kruvim ha'mo'orin zebazen. The Goyim came and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and they saw the Kruvim hugging each other. Now, this is surprising because one would have thought that at this point in time, the Kruvim would be far apart. As we know, toward the ends of the Beis HaMikdash, the display of the Kruvim, where they were far apart, showing or identifying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was unhappy with Klal Yisrael. But at the time of the actual destruction, Hashem wanted to show us the closeness that he had to Klal Yisrael, so the Kruvim were together. So, Hotziu Lashuk, so the horrible enemy, they took the Kruvim out to the marketplace. And they said to everybody, this is the holy Jews, Yisrael Alolu, should be Chasim Bracha, Vikilisasim Kabbalah. These are the Jews, that their Bracha, if they bless somebody, it's a Bracha, and if they curse somebody, it's a curse. It says by Avraham Avinu, whoever you bless is blessed, whoever you curse is cursed. So these are the great Jews. This is their holiness, their pureness. Yasku Bedwar Malolu, they have these, I don't want to use the term, pornographic statues over here. This is what they're dealing with. Miyah Hezilul, they denigrated the Jewish people. They made fun of us, Rachmana Litzlan. Hezilul, lashon of totally embarrassing us, Shenemar, Kol Mechabdel Hezilul. The previous ones who we had respect for them now are embarrassing them. Kiro Erva saw, because they saw the Erva, they saw the Kruvim in their nakedness, say, and therefore this was a tremendous zilzul for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, zilzul for Klal Yisrael, Hashem Yirachim. That concludes the discussion that we began at the beginning of the shiur today, which really was the conclusion of yesterday's shiur, with what happened to the Aron. Was it taken into Galus or was it Nignas? Now we quote the next part of the Mishnah where it says, Ushasiya Haisunikres. In the second Beis HaMikdash, when they didn't have the Aron there, so where did they, Kohen Gadol, put down on the ground the coals and then put the Ketores on top of that? So it was on top of the Evin Shasiya, which we said was slightly raised, three etzbos above the ground. Now, Ushasiya Haisunikres. This Evin was known as Shasiya. And now we'll go into an even more esoteric Gemara that discusses how the world was created from this Evin Shasiya. Now, we're going to read the words. We're not going to understand this at all. We're going to read the words. They're fascinating words. But these are very, very deep and esoteric ideas that we're just going to not even scratch the surface. Tata, we learn the Brisa. Shemimeno Hushas Olam. The Evin Shasiya was the foundation stone, and that's how the world got founded. And from this, the world was created. Now, what does this mean? Tanan, Kiman Diyomer, this goes in accord with the following opinion in the following Mishnah. Mitzion Nivra Olam. The Mishnah tells us that the world was created from Tzion, from Eretz Yisrael. Rashi explains, Tzion Nivres Tchila, Eretz Yisrael was built originally, Usvidaha Nidbeku Rigovim, and pieces of dirt were attached to it, Atzof Olam, until the whole world was created, be called Tzad. So we start off over here with Tzion Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, and then the rest of the world is created. The Tanya, because the Braisa tells us, Rabbi Eliezer Omer will have a number of different opinions how the world was created. So Rabbi Eliezer holds, Olam Niem Tziosu Nivra, the world was created from its middle, from its center. As the Pasuk says, Shenemar, the Pasuk in Eov, it tells us, Betzekes Ofar Lamutzok. So you had dirt that was added to a certain rock, urigovim yidubaku, and additional earth was then added to that, and that's how the world was formed. Rabbi Yeshua says, olam min hatzdadim nivra. He says, no, the outer four corners of the world were first created, and then they were filled in, all the dirt in between them. Olam min hatzdadim nivra, shenemar, ki la sheleg yomar, hevei oretz, v'geshem motor, v'geshem mitros uzo. Okay, again, we understand from this pasuk that the world was created from the corners, and then it was filled in with all of these various phenomena. From these weather phenomena, that's how the earth was actually created. Again, like I said before, we don't really understand this. It's interesting, Rabbi Elazar and Yeshua have a machlokas as to when the world was created. One says the world was created in Nisan, the other one says the world was created in Tishrei. So they have this machlokas in terms of how the world was created as well. Then we have Rav Yitzchak. Now, the Gersa that we have is Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, but in the Mesoros HaShas, it says that in the Ein Yaakov, we don't have the word Nafcha. In any event, Rav Yitzchak or Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, Omar, he said, Evin Yoro HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bayam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol, throw this rock into the bodies of water, Mimenu Nishtas Olam, and the world was founded from that. That rock that was thrown into the water, it eventually grew all of the earth from it. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, it's a pasuk also from Iyov. Almo Adoneho Hotbou O Mi Yoro Evin Pinoso. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu threw this rock into the oceans of the world, the original primordial water, and created the earth. That's another opinion. Rav Yitzchak or Rav Yitzchak Nacha. Finally, the Chachamim Omrim, the Chachamim say, Mitzio Nivra. They agree with the idea that it was from Tzion that it was Nivra, based upon the pasuk in Tehillim, where it says, Mizmor li Osof, and it says, Kel Elokim Hashem. What does that mean? Va'omer, Mitzion Michlal Yofi. That's the next pasuk. Mitzion Michlal Yofi, Elokim Hofia. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it all from Tzion. Mimenu, Muchlal Yofi Yoshalolim. From Tzion came the whole beauty of the world. In other words, the Evin Shasia, this Tzion, was the creation or the foundation of the entire world. Okay. Again, like I said, we don't fully understand this at all. Very deep and esoteric ideas. Tanya, we have another brisa that's also very deep and esoteric. Rabbi Elazar HaGadol Omer, Eila Toldos HaShamayim Va'aretz Pi Baram. These are the generations, the Toldos of Shamayim Va'aretz when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them. B'yom Asos HaShem Elokim Eretz V'Shamayim. On that day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Eretz and the Shamayim, the land and the Shamayim, the heavens. Toldo Shamayim Mishamayim Nivro, the generations of Shamayim were made from Shamayim. Rashi explains this means the Ma'oros and the Kochavim, all the heavenly luminary bodies, and the suns and the stars and the moon, etc. And Toldo Saaretz Me'aretz Nivro, and all the generations of the earth, all the things that came from earth, were created. That's the opinion of Elazar HaGadol. Chacham Mamrim, Eilu Eilu Mitzion Nivro, both everything, the Shamayim and the Aretz, was made from Tzion. From the Evin Shasiyo, Shenemar, Mizmor Liosof, Kel Elokim Hashem, Diber, Vayikro Oretz, Mimizrach Shemesh Amav O'ol. And it says, after that, Omer Mitzio Mechla Yofi, Elokim Ophia, the passage that we just quoted before, Mimenu Muchla Yofi Yoshalolam, that this was the whole world was created from this seal and from the Evin Shasiyo. Again, as I said, we read the words, but I really do not understand them. They're very deep ideas that Chazal put into place here for Yechidim in each generation to understand. Fine. The Mishnah then is quoted and says, "Not alas Adam imishim maris bavuchule." After the Kohen Gadol did the Haktoris Haktoris, and now he went and he brought in the dam of the par, which somebody was stirring so it shouldn't congeal, and he did the eight applications of the dam of the par, one up, seven down, as we had said, and then he did the applications of the Sawyer, he shechted the Sawyer, and he did those eight applications, and then he went out into the area of the Heichal and did another eight applications of the Par, and then another eight applications of the Sawyer Lashem. And we said he did not like one above the other and the other below it, but he said Kimatzlif. So now we explain finally what Matzlif means. My Kimatzlif, what does it mean that he did it like a Matzlif? So Machve Reviuda showed, he literally demonstrated kimigdana, like a person who's whipping somebody, kimaka beritsua, that when you whip somebody with a whip, shemaskul minaksefayim, you start off from the shoulder area, so you land the blows onto the shoulder area of the person that you're giving the lashes to, umaka v'holik lamata, and then the next lash is a little bit below that, next lash is a little bit below that. That's what it means, kimatzlif, in our Mishnah. Tosos Yishanim, early in the Masechta, disagrees with this understanding of Rashi, and he says it's the way your hand is oriented. Your hand is originally oriented up, and then your hand is oriented down as you're doing the whipping. It's like you turn your hand over as you do the whipping. Certainly, the last part of the shiur was quite complicated, very fascinating and interesting. This is a very good break point. With this, we conclude today's shiur.